Welcome to my daddy's podcast, UKUCAR. It's sponsored by his and my mummy's business called Deliciously Guilt Free. We are homeschooling. Enjoy the show.
Right, and we're done. But just to let you know, the delay on this call is so bad. I don't know if you're aware, but I feel really bad. Every time I talk, you're like starting another sentence, and then you'll go, oh, what? And I'm like, oh, God, I've been talking for like 3 seconds already. And then you literally are in front of me, nodding while I'm silent, nodding away. And then you go, well, that's right. And I could tell there's a delay. So clearly what I'm saying has come to you a few seconds after I've said it. And I realized that at the beginning of the call, and I was like, oh, my God, this isn't good. But I thought, just wait until he's slowed down so I could try and come in quickly so you've got a bit of warning that I'm coming back out. So sorry if I was talking over you a bit, because I wasn't really, but it just sounded that way to you. So I'm really sorry about that.
What I have learned over the past 2 years has been magnificent. You know, it's completely changed my life.
And so you're not going to die if you don't eat carbohydrates, but you will die if you don't eat fat and protein.
The energy I have, the life I have that has changed so amazingly in a few years, proves to me that what I'm eating is only doing me good.
I'd love to meet them because they changed my life, basically.
So I've lost now. I'm about 3 pounds off losing 5 stone.
Hello and welcome to UK Low Carb. This is your podcast, the podcast where we share the real life stories and experiences of people like you and me, people who follow the low carb or keto diet. So join me, Dan Grief, and my co-host each Friday to hear their story. And if you'd like to get involved, then please email me, dan@uklowcarb.com, or join our growing Facebook group, UK Low Carb. And finally, please rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts so that we can get the message out about the amazing benefits of the low-carb and keto lifestyle. Now, this podcast is sponsored by my business, Deliciously Guilt-Free. Just use the code PODCAST and you can have 20% off your order. On with the show! Hey everyone, you may have just picked up there in the intro that we did have a bit of a delay when I was recording this with Ollie. He is a brilliant, brilliant bloke, and I've known Ollie for a few months now, and I've really got to like and respect the man, and I think you're going to pick up on this in this episode as well. But yeah, we were recording with Zencastr, and never used Zencastr before. It's a brilliant program, actually. It does video, it does audio, it does everything. It's better than Zoom, that's for sure. However, I'd never seen the video function before, and I clicked it thinking, well, let's give it a go. But for some reason, it gave a massive delay. So when he is talking, it's embarrassing. I was kind of coming over the top of him, and I realized this was happening because I was somehow delayed from him. And so he would just think I was probably just cutting over him as he's halfway through a sentence. But I'd start talking when he was in a quiet period. Then he starts talking, and then my voice suddenly comes out of nowhere, talking over the top of the poor man. And then at the end... I could see his face in my imagination, and it's just making me laugh because the poor guy was then nodding because he could hear my voice still in his ears, but I had stopped talking for about 3-4 seconds, and I'd be looking at him nodding, listening intently and going, yep, that's right, Dan. And then he'd carry on. So he didn't realize that I had finished a few seconds before, and then I'd panic thinking, right, I've got to try and talk in this interview at some point without completely flattening what he's saying. So I'd just be like, right, he's quiet, quick, go for it. Or I'd do a little run up thinking, yeah, that's right. And And I also think that, and try to go in that way. Anyway, yeah, the joys of podcasting, and using new programs you don't know. Oh, bloomin' heck. Anyway. Right, so we'll see what happens. We've Josh, my editing guy, who just started with me the other week. This is his first podcast. He's been editing with me, and it's just the worst we've ever had in terms of editing skills. We've tried to mix and match, and you'll see how successful it was. Let me know. You know, send an email, make a comment on Instagram, whatever. You know, just tell me, is this a good episode in terms of how we put it together? I hope it is, because I want to do justice to Ollie Lester. What a bloke. I really, really like Ollie. Now, he is, well, his story, should I say, is kind of really interesting. He's looking at holistic health. You know, this is the sort of man who, you look at him, he looks really chiseled, he looks really fit and healthy. You know, he's actually way, way younger looking than I realised his age. By the way, he's about my age. I'm not trying to have a go there, Ollie. And he does, you know, he does like these ice cold baths. He, you know, he's been on many different experiences around the world. He's really travelled. And as he's travelled, he's tried to learn. He's actually been trained by, I think it was like the right-hand man to the Dalai Lama. So, you know, he's had some incredible experiences. Really, really interesting life. Really interested in health. And I love the fact that he has kind of had a fresh pair of eyes on British society and Western society because of his experience abroad, which I think is really interesting. I think travel is really important in some ways to understand where you come from. And I think that's true for my experience of travel. I'm sure it is for many of you as well. And it is really important to see a different culture. When you see your own culture, you just analyse it in a completely new way because you think, well, it's not like that somewhere else, so why do we do that? Anyway, I think it's a brilliant episode. Really enjoyed recording it with him. And because it's part of my new series of episodes, this was only recorded this week. So it's super fresh. I've got a gap, actually. I've got nothing prepared for next week at all. So if you get into me now, then you've probably got a very good chance of being on this time next week. Okay? All right, everyone. So, yeah, I'm going to hand over now to Ollie. Just to say, he is a member of the UK Low Carb Facebook group, and you can be too. So go and check it out on Facebook. And he's a regular member of the Wolfpack, where he has done sort of some extended fasts with us. He's also a public health collaboration ambassador. Blumenek, my brain is tired. Right, so he's a public health collaboration ambassador, and he does amazing work in the NHS to really help people to, yeah, get back to their healthy selves, which is wonderful. Right, so without much further ado, here is Ollie, and I think the first question I had to ask him was about lockdown and how's he getting on. So over to Ollie Lester. Hey, Ollie, how are you managing with lockdown?
I'm doing all right. I try and keep outdoors as much as possible when I'm not working. So walking on the beach and dunking in the sea down here in Bournemouth, that's kind of keeping me sane. So that's all right.
Excellent. Because I know that piece of the coast pretty well. I used to work not far from that. I was in Hampshire, but it's very close to Bournemouth. Uh-huh. So I used to go down to Bournemouth fairly frequently in the summer. And I thought it was a lovely place. I really like the area. Nice bit of coast. Lots of celebrities around there as well, if I remember rightly.
I don't know about that. Maybe Harry Redknapp, but I've not seen him for a while.
You've got Paul Gascoigne, apparently, is around there. You've got apparently a few wealthy people are in that area of the world.
Yeah, I haven't seen Paul for a while. I hope he's all right. But
no, he hasn't come over to borrow some milk or anything. Anyway. Okay, great. So let's dive in, as they say on podcasts these days. Let's dive into the conversation. So I know you, Ollie, because you're part of the UK Low Carb Facebook group. You've also been involved with some of our fasts in the past and stuff as well. So how did you come across the Facebook group? How did you come into that group in the first place?
I'm a bit of a podcast nerd, and I've been podcasting or listening to podcasts since 2017, and all kind of health-related stuff, and I've dived deep into all things food, and I think you came up on a suggestion. Just, you know, I was listening to another low-carb one, maybe the low-carb MD, and then it linked into you. And then, it's one of my things, one of my hobbies is just walking along, listening to podcasts and learning and moving. It's a good way of spending time for me, so yeah. Here I am.
Yeah, I mean, actually, to think that I'm a recommendation after Low Carb MD is amazing. I think it's a brilliant podcast. Absolutely love it. So let's go through then your story, because I think it's a really interesting one that people want to hear. I want to hear a bit about your change in life generally, because let's be honest, this isn't just about low carb, is it? It seems to me like for a big part of your life, you've probably lived one way. You've then had this kind of epiphany moment, and it's changed your life in so many ways, your career, your lifestyle, your health. I think it's really interesting. So can we just go back before that epiphany? What was life like for most of your life in terms of nutrition and health?
I think nutrition wise, I wasn't really aware of what I was eating. And that goes back to childhood. And I was living on Kellogg's Frosties. That was my breakfast and my supper. And I had, yeah, joining the docs back from now, it's interesting because I had my wisdom teeth out at 18, all four of them at once. And now what I'd learnt about nutrition and all this kind of stuff, the teeth are a kind of a canary in the coal mine, as it were, for your overall health, I think. And I had braces when I was 15 or 16 for a couple of years. And then throughout my 20s and sort of uni days, I grinded my teeth quite a lot for various reasons, right. Nutritional ones. And yeah, I had sort of depression for quite a few years as well. I had really bad dental health growing up, which is very fascinating looking back now. As well as I wasn't really out of shape, but mental and dental is how I kind of phrase it. So I wasn't really, really happy in my 20s. I was working in the travel industry in London at the time. Although I liked the kind of industry, it wasn't really floating my boat. It wasn't really a passion of mine. So I had a trip out to Nepal in 2005, where I did some volunteering. So that was kind of my relationship with Nepal sort of started then. Then I came back, had a better job in travel. Worked for an adventure travel company in London, which was Progress, I suppose. But I was still kind of wanting to travel and escaping kind of the life I was living kind of thing. I would summarise that as.
Can I just ask on that? Because I've done a lot of travelling too. Yeah. And did you feel that in a way that you're trying to get away from your life here? Now, of course, I'm not saying your life wasn't full enough in this country, but you know, I've worked in jobs certainly where I felt a little bit like the wrong shape for that hole, should we say? Mm. And for me, the travel was, that's what I lived for actually. So I would like work somewhere for a year, save up lots of money, and then go away for 5-6 months and do some teaching abroad or something. And did you feel that way too? Is that you'll kind of get out of your own little world and see something different and change it up a little bit?
Pretty much, yeah. You're always living for your next trip away. And it was an adventure travel company I was working with. So I did some loads of great trips, like climbed Kilimanjaro, went trekking in Himalayas, and all the trips were brilliant. But it was always like coming back and, it was fun. It was a nice bunch of people, really good mates still from those days. And then I got a transfer with that same company to Melbourne, which I thought that would be the answer to all my solutions or life problems or whatever, which was great. Amazing, met some amazing people, but sort of still deep down, I didn't really love the job and love my hadn't found my purpose, as it were. So then I, after 3.5 years, I kind of jacked that in, and I came back actually initially wanting to be a geography teacher. That was my grand plan back in England.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Hang on a minute. I'm hearing this for the first time. I'm a history teacher.
Yeah, I know.
We don't like cats and dogs here.
Yeah, yeah.
This is going to be a problem.
Yeah.
So you got your patches for your elbows all sorted out. You got your colouring in crayons all sharpened. Ooh,
yeah,
okay. I apologise to any geography teachers. Just joking
right.
There.
No, I really like geography. I studied that at uni. And then I went back to my old school in Hampshire for 1 week to observe. And I thought, this is possibly my path, but I did 1 week and I thought that was not for me. It was just too draining and too many too much work, like before and after the lessons. So I was like, okay, see you later, I'm gonna go
I'm glad you got to see that, because so many people in teaching, I guess they kind of remember it from their own experience in the classroom. They don't see necessarily like you did that. Mm. The actual the public facing part, the actual delivering a lesson, is 1/3 of the job. The other 2/3 are outside of the classroom, and it's real admin based job as well. Yeah. Which most people don't see that. So I kind of feel like that was one of the jobs I was discussing actually, where I felt a bit like the wrong shape for that hole. It just didn't work for me really. Okay, yeah. So you're thinking about teaching.
So I dipped my toe in the water and thought, right, okay, that's not for me. In January 2017, I was going to travel anyway. So I took pretty much a year in Asia. So I went to Nepal and India and did just trying to just seek out other philosophies and other activities that I hadn't tried before. So I did loads of meditation. I did loads of volunteer teaching in Nepal and in Kerala in India. I hung out with monks in Dharamsala, did some Buddhist retreats and learnt off some like Buddhist teachers, and one of which was the Dalai Lama's translator for about 8 years, I think. And he's like the wisest man I've ever heard. And I wrote so many notes in that sort of 6 day retreat, and fascinating because he's met all the world leaders and just pure wisdom kind of thing. So that was amazing. Loads of trekking in the mountains as well. And just sort of reevaluated where I wanted to be, and all this kind of learning from the monks about sort of self-compassion and self-awareness really like changed my outlook on myself. Just learning about how to value yourself and give yourself self-worth and self-compassion. It's not the sort of stuff we learn about in the UK. But over in the East, it's kind of, this is rule one, like lesson one of school is how to do that kind of stuff. My relationship with myself really enhanced. And just being with other, in that kind of culture, if you like. And the food I was eating was great. It wasn't low carb at that point, but it was all freshly prepared. I was active, I was outdoors, I was connecting with people, learning about how to manage my own stress.
Can I just check as well your meal times? Were the meal times also communal? Was it a shared experience eating? Oh. Because a lot of people I find in this country, I don't want to talk too generally, but many people do have dinner as a family, but actually lots of us are eating on the go. I know at the moment my wife and my meals are like completely separate because we just don't see each other often. So it's quickly get something down your neck and then you're on to the next thing. So was it more of a communal experience eating in Asia as well?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I did homestays with families when I was working at a school in Nepal. That was always sitting on the floor, eating your food. When I was volunteering in Kerala, same thing, like just as a family, and it was always freshly cooked. I don't remember having a sort of leftover. It's just a whole, we cook and eat as a group. It's more, well, freshly prepared is the way to go, and kids sort of are part of that cooking process as well, and they pick up the tips and skills from a young age, but we don't kind of have that over here. To our detriment, I think.
In terms of your health then, so you said it wasn't low carb, but actually you did have fresh, healthy food. So did you notice any difference in your own health at that time, or was it more your perspective about food changed?
Yeah, I think perspective. Because I was like traveling, I really like fell in love with podcasts. And if I had any kind of spare time, I wasn't doing anything else. It was either podcasting, reading books, or like practicing like meditation and stuff like that. So I had a lot of time on my own. So it was just trying to learn and just really loved the learning process. So learning about mindset and food and anything health related really was my go-to. And I'd get on like, 8 hour bus rides sometimes from Kathmandu to Pokhara, which is like the main bus journey there. And I'd be just loading up podcasts and thinking, this is great. 8 hours on a bus, just learning stuff.
That's amazing. Yeah. I'm so envious. I wish I could do that.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And just sort of being more happier and saying hello to sort of all the locals. And it was just a really good time. And on that podcast, actually, on the many podcasts, I came across Wim Hof, the Iceman, like the Cold War guy. Have you heard of him? He's been doing loads of...
No, so say that again. So did you say Wim Hof, did you say?
Yeah, he's been on BBC radio as well as doing all the sort of Joe Rogan and all the other health-related podcasts like Russell Brand and Fern Cotton. He's a Dutch guy. He does cold exposure and breathing and mindset. So those are his three pillars. So at the end of that year, when I came back from India... I went straight to Poland pretty much and did a 6 day retreat in Poland with Wim Hof and a bunch of other people all around the world. And we learned about how to kind of do ice dips and climb a mountain in the Polish winter wearing our shorts in kind of ridiculous temperatures. And yeah, again, it's like...
this is amazing. I'm so like envious of some of the things you've done. Okay, the cold dips don't sound great to me, but I'm sure there must be a real amount of learning there and endurance and, yeah massive respect for all that, Ollie. That's incredible.
Yeah, it was like overcoming limits and beliefs. And I had a lot of limits and beliefs about where I could go and what I could do and just the relationship with myself. And just overcoming that, that's just like a kind of a metaphor, really. And I still do cold showers every day. I had one just before we did this, actually. Just to sort of, liven yourself up. So that was a
that's
good
one. Like, well, I'm going to do that then. I'm going to go and do that after this.
As a challenge. Yeah. And then when I came back from, the pretty much 11 months in Asia and a week in Poland, that was December 2017. And it just struck me, like, when I came back to the UK, how unhealthy our nation is by default. I kind of stepped out of the English bubble for, almost a year and not really realised that I was just upgrading my health spiritually, mentally, physically. And then, coming back into sort of December, run up to Christmas, everyone's on the lash and drinking and eating absolute junk. I just remember I really felt not great having gone from good food to rubbish food. That led me on to kind of seeking out where I wanted to go next. And then I joined a health coaching course, which is all about habits and how to change your thing. How to change your habits, and that's basically what you do on a daily basis, all around food and movement and stress management and all this kind of stuff that our culture doesn't have any priority over.
Completely agree with you on that. Completely agree. And I just want to say, I've not stepped outside of British society for like a year. I've done 6 months, and I imagine that it's probably the case that you've got a reset on what humans look like as well. Because like you said, you come back and you're shocked. I imagine suddenly the bigger waistlines, the less healthy people, people probably walking around out of breath and all those things are more of a shock because you're just not used to seeing it because you haven't seen it for such a long time. And I guess we're like the frogs in the water here a little bit where you just, that becomes the new normal, doesn't it? So the other day on a Clubhouse conversation, actually, I was talking about how a family member lost a lot of weight. And people are saying, oh, is he actually healthy now? And it's like, well, actually, that's his actual body shape. Just you're not used to seeing it. You know, you're used to think of him as a big guy, but his actual body shape shouldn't be that big. It should be smaller. And so we're just not used to that sort of general health, are we?
No, not at all. I remember, I think it was David Perlmutter. He's one of the doctors I listen to loads of podcasts. I remember him saying to read the label, you need to step out of the jar. And that's like, that kind of made sense to
that's
me.
That's good.
Removing myself from the jar, I can sort of see back now and see what is going on in the UK. And it's, from my eyes, it's not great.
And it's happened gradually, I suppose, over a few decades that, you just gradually think that becomes normal. And then you think about America, some really massive obesity problems. And that could almost be our next step. It is our next step, isn't it, at the moment? You can see we're going the same direction. We're just maybe a step or two behind them. That's the problem. So, so this health coaching. So at the moment, this has nothing to do with low carb yet, is it? This is just general health. And you said it's about movement, about food. So the nutrition side's a big part of it. And also is there spirituality or mindset. Is that right?
Yeah, pretty much. So I studied for 6 months doing health coaching in the first part of the year. And then I joined the UK Health Coaches Association, which only set up in 2018. So I kind of got in there from the start, and they had a conference in London for the first year, and Rangan Chatterjee was their kind of keynote speaker. And I really like his stuff, really resonated with him and lifestyle kind of changes and empowering people. That's when I met Sam Feltham as well, the director of the PHC, the Public Health Collaboration. And it instantly kind of resonated with me what he was saying about the state of the nation, the state of the nation's health, how unhealthy we are, and what we are and what we aren't doing as well. There's a big we're barking at the wrong tree, I would say, with our current advice from the top of the NHS. I kind of jumped on that low carb bandwagon from there, joined the Facebook group and became an ambassador for PHC. And have learned so much.
I just want to say on that note then, so if anyone's listening and they don't know what the Public Health Collaboration is, the Public Health Collaboration is a charity, isn't it, which Sam Feltham is the chair of the charity. And its mission is to educate primarily, isn't it, with different doctors and specialists who are coming together to get the voice out there about real food, and in particular, cutting back on sugar primarily, but also carbohydrate, because actually most of us are pretty sick from eating excessive amounts of both.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. So yeah,
just say you're the ambassador. So if I've got that wrong, you can tell me that I've got it wrong, can't you? So you can correct me. And just tell us about the role of the ambassador, because some people might not know about the role of the ambassador. So an ambassador is, well, anyone could be an ambassador if they apply and they're accepted. But what's the process? What do you do as an ambassador? And I know that varies per person, but what's the kind of, what's the ambassador program all about?
Yeah, you have a line of chat up with Sam, and you get a training session. I did that when we were allowed to meet a couple of years ago. And you get through, you just learn about how to approach medical practices, and with the aim of potentially setting up support groups for people who are seeking to improve their health with lifestyle change. And a lot of people here in this country are either overweight or obese, or their blood sugars all over the place, and that is pretty much the root cause of a lot of chronic disease. So if we can help individuals improve their health and turn their lives up, as it were, that's what we aim to do. I didn't actually get very far when I was sort of dabbling and making connections with people I kind of already knew in the health centre. They didn't really want to embrace it. And I kind of just laid low for a bit. I was kind of making tracks slowly with the health coaching, like privately. But then I was always quite curious about a route into NHS. And yeah, weirdly enough, like the job I kind of saw initially is in the same town I grew up in, which is, all kinds of going back to my roots kind of thing. So yeah, I applied for a job as a social prescriber and a health coach. So a social prescriber is a non-medical way of improving people's lifestyles. And this is kind of a new tactic from the NHS. So we would discuss with patients for half an hour or an hour sometimes all around their lifestyle imbalances. And often it could be debt, it could be unemployment. But more often than not, it would be weight issues and just feeling rubbish about life and mental health.
Can I ask you about that then? Like, what do you pick up as in your role? Do you find that there's a general pattern that there's something affecting most people, or is it going to be as unique and different as each person that comes to you?
Yeah, generally, it's a bit of both, actually. I always say, you can't judge anyone. Everyone's unique. And we're all kind of seeing the world differently. You hear patients say, oh, you probably think this is weird. But I'm like, not really, because we're all weird. So whatever, it doesn't really matter to me.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
But common themes, you ask somebody, how are you feeling? What would you like to improve? That's kind of my opening line. And more often than not, number one is weight. Because our population, what is it, 65% or something like that of people who are in this country are overweight. So that's kind of and of those who seek medical or the NHS help, maybe that's a bit more in my experience. I don't know. That's just my guess anyway. So yeah, then I kind of explore, what have you tried before and where you want to get to, and is there a weight or a state of health you would like to get to? And virtually nobody has heard of like the low carb route. They've already often say they have tried Weight Watchers, Slimming World, and exercising, shake diets, and they're still considerably unhappy and considerably overweight.
And also, I'd imagine at the same time, they probably have this problem whereby they're enslaved to always having to do the program, aren't they? Mm. So they probably, this is what I hear often, people lose weight through lots of exercise. You know, you hear about this quite often, and I've done it as well, whereby you have an intense period of exercise over a few months or quite often a few weeks. You might lose the weight, but then it comes back again. Now, I'm not saying that exercise is a fad. Of course, it's important. But some of these dietary plans, on the other hand, they have a tendency to work when you're on it. And then when you finish, then you're in trouble again. And actually, I was talking to somebody actually just today who was saying, you know, I used to lose lots of weight on one of those plans. And then I'd gain more when I came back off it again than I had in the first place. So I'd go back on it again, and then I'd gain more again. So there's that horrible cycle. And unfortunately, most people in that situation then think it's their fault because they have made the wrong food choices afterwards. And it's not really quite like that, is it? It's more based on their starving their bodies for a few weeks or months, and that's why they're having this problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, what we know now in the low carb world, it's more about hormones, right? And but nobody really. This isn't as well known as it should be. And I think from what I've learned off people like Jason Fung and Ken Berry and all these people and David Unwin, insulin is our fat storage hormone. And that's one of my first questions when I've sort of gone around their lifestyle. I question about, you know, what you're doing right now. Who's living in your house? What's your relationship with food and cooking and shopping? Do you like that kind of stuff? And then you say, okay, so your goal is to lose weight. What's our fat storage hormone called? And hardly anyone I've asked that. Maybe I've asked that to about, I don't know, 100 people, or I can do that, two would say, yeah, it's insulin. So this is like the most obvious thing in the room that needs to be mentioned and shouted from the rooftop.
Did you know that before? I didn't know that before, though, and I guess you didn't either.
No.
You know, like, for instance, I think I said this before as well. I thought that insulin was a drug that diabetic people took. I didn't realize that it's a synthetic hormone replacement that their body makes naturally. I didn't realize any of that stuff. And so, you know, you kind of just think it's a drug that you take. Diabetic people need it because their body doesn't do something, so they need this drug to help them. So when you then get told, did you know this is how you make fat? It's quite a shock at first to think, hang on a minute, this is on its head then. This is completely different to everything I've thought. So I can't blame them. I feel like they're the victims of this ignorance.
Oh, completely. Yeah, you can't blame anyone because our food environment in this country as well is absurd. Our marketing is just all absolute junk. And it's all, you know, it's insulin-raising foods that are the main ones that get marketed to us.
And also people can't cook or don't cook as much as they used to.
Again, like I think it goes back to roots, cause, and if you can't cook, I think you're sooner or later you're screwed because you're going to be pressing buttons on your phone to order Deliveroo or dial pizza or whatever and eat out of ready meals or takeaways or whatever. So it's just we're unskilled at how to create our health. So going back to the question then. So insulin is my, what's the fat storage hormone? Insulin. Then it's like, okay, so if our goal is to lose weight, we need to identify what the foods that cause the insulin, right? So then you go through, it's the raised blood sugar, and then the insulin comes in as, in response to that. So really what I'm asking them is what foods raise your blood sugar? So they say like chocolate, cake, biscuits and stuff, but then not many of them say, rice, pasta, potato, cereal, bread. That's like the elephant in the
room. There's a complete disconnect between the two, though, aren't there?
Yeah.
There's a disconnection there between eating a bar of chocolate or eating like a piece of bread. You know, one is seen as being a luxury treat that you have because it's got sugar. The other one is seen as being a complete food staple that you must eat, otherwise you're going to get sick, which is really quite dangerous, I'd say, for some people, especially if they've got high blood sugar problems and insulin, etc., that follows from that. But I think that is exactly the problem. People think, well, this is just something you have to eat. No, it breaks down and has the same sort of breakdown into sugar in your body, and that's the problem, which we've got to try to educate people about.
Yeah, exactly right. And once you've identified the cause of their problem and the cause of their weight gain, the cause of their diabetes, it's then saying, you know, what would you like to eat that doesn't have that impact? And I forget who said it. It was like finding the foods that you love, that love your body. And then when you get those two in the sweet spot, that is like where the magic happens.
Yeah, love that.
But we're all eating the stuff that doesn't love our body. So if we're doing that, then we're going to be, on the road to chronic disease. And then it's kind of giving them options, giving them ideas, suggestions of starting your plate off with meat, fish and eggs, and then chucking on above ground vegetables. And yeah, you say like, oh, any vegetable grows above the ground, has less starch, and therefore it could be anything you like, chuck that on your plate as well. And then that's the basis for a pretty simple meal. And it doesn't have to be complicated.
So in terms of the success that you have then, so I know you can't go into obviously patient sort of details and whatnot, but there must be people that you've probably seen, firstly, the light comes on, they suddenly click and go, hang on a minute, this makes sense. And then there must be some lovely stories of people who then go on to make changes in their lives. And I can imagine it's one of those jobs that must be so rewarding when that happens, because you've given somebody freedom. You've given them the ability to have a little bit of control over their food and their future. But that's an amazing thing to give people. Mm. So do you want to tell me a bit about what it's like when that happens?
Yeah, it's great, because some of them, in my first call with them, some of them have told me like they've never heard that explained to them before. And, they're 60-year-old or whatever. And I'm just thinking, that's taken me 10 minutes to do that. And I've just learned it for myself.
Yeah.
And why isn't this like rule one of diabetes and weight loss? So, but it is very rewarding. And then they come back. I normally check in with them 2 weeks after, then maybe 3 weeks after that. And just hearing their little patterns of progress is great. And then,
so what about the doctors and the health professionals? Because you're part of the NHS now. So, you're working with social prescribing and giving this advice. Is there any discussion or debate with health professionals about this, or do they question the low carb? Well, I guess low carb is pretty straightforward. Nobody really questions that. Do you ever talk about higher healthy fats though?
It's a sensitive one, I think, because just based on the narrative that we had for the last 40 years. But I just phrase it as natural fats, and fats, as we know, don't raise insulin. And it's kind of re-educating the whole population, whether they're NHS workers or not. We've been clearly barking up the wrong tree, haven't we?
There is a problem there with NHS workers who quite often are also unhealthy. There's a high proportion of NHS workers who have obesity, type 2 diabetes, probably because of like working shift patterns and then grabbing probably ultra-processed rubbish food as and when they can.
Mm. Yeah, I would love to do something about the culture, particularly in office culture in general, but also within the NHS, because I don't think, one of the centres I work in is called New Milton Health Centre, but we don't have healthy foods in the staff room, and there's no blame or shame in that. I'm not judging anyone. It's just the normality and the acceptability of it. And I think Asim Malhotra's been trying to make waves there. And, it's just trying to suggest something else as an alternative because, the health of our own staff could be better. And, I'm not having a go at anyone.
Isn't that weird, though? I mean, I agree with you. You're not having a go. You're trying to help people. I totally get that. But there's an association with sugar, especially. Like, if you take that away from somebody, then you're being some sort of Puritan who's trying to make their life hell. Mm. And in actual fact, you're just trying to say, look, this is bad for you. And I think Gary Taube says it in his book, The Case Against Sugar. Now, if you could see the impact of sugar in the short term, just like you can with alcohol, people would be like, oh, yeah, you really can't have that. It's really bad for you, let alone the fact you get drunk. But also, the damage you could do to your body and all these things which happen quite quickly with alcohol. But because with sugar, it's kind of like, 20, 30, 40 years of continual eating it, people haven't really got the connection that it's dangerous. And it's almost like, well, let them have fun. And you saw that in the first lockdown, didn't you, with these donuts being donated to the hospital and a lot of cake companies. We didn't, because I thought it was tacky personally, but a lot of cake companies are donating their free cakes to hospitals to get their publicity shots. And I was like, look, my wife's actually on the front line as a doctor. I don't need to do that. I just, you know, whatever. But I just found that a little bit like sickening to think there are sugary things that are being given, as if that was a good treat for those people. And I thought, but it's not. You wouldn't count out a packet of cigarettes, would you, and say, have a cigarette, everyone. Just relax with a cheeky smoke because you're fighting COVID. That wouldn't add up. But sugar, it's different. And I find that really interesting.
Yeah, it's baffling to me. And I say, like, I've just, as my self-awareness has grown, I just see stuff more obviously, I think. And having practiced, like, reading food labels and all this kind of stuff, and I just see it, you know, if you put a tin of biscuits in front of me, I just see it as, you know, dog food or something like that. I just don't eat it. Same with, like, cans of Coke. And
That's exactly my
practice. I've been, you know, in this mindset now for, I don't know, 3.5 years or so. So it comes with just awareness.
And I think it gets easier with time, doesn't it? It gets easier. The more you do it, the more you kind of realise, oh, I can eat these things. I can't eat those things. And if you even go further and say, I eat food, I don't eat that stuff which isn't food. I think that even helps more, doesn't it? If you count it all as being equal to each other, but you're denying yourself something, that's hard, I'd say. But when you appreciate what food actually is, and you're saying, well, I'm going to eat the broccoli and the steak and a bit of cheese or something, I'm not going to eat the thing that's got a huge list of ingredients, preservatives, things which are in there to give it a longer shelf life, which aren't good for me at all, I'd say that's not actually food at all. That is just a mixture of chemicals which taste a bit like something that my mouth would like. It doesn't mean it's food. And I think that's the way that I try to rationalize that.
Yeah, I totally agree. But it's the acceptability of it. And it's not even kind of questions in any office around the country. It's always always sugar, isn't it? So, but in, you know, stuff coming out about the COVID, and you're more susceptible if your blood sugars are high and if you're obese. You know, there's nothing being said about that, is there? And we had Boris tweeting last week, actually, tweeting like Cadbury's and everyone to eat Cadbury's chocolate. It's just bonkers. And that coming from number one.
Well, I suppose there's a financial reason for that, I'd have thought. Although the actual financial impact on the NHS is not worth it, I'd suggest, let alone the happiness and health of our nation.
Crazy.
But, you know, I was going to just come on to another point there, but yeah, I just want to say, like, you also have done a bit of fasting as well, haven't you? Which sounds like from your experiences doing your ice baths and stuff, maybe fasting something you've done previously. But how's that helped you on your journey as well?
Yeah, it's been fascinating. I think, Wim Hof, the ice guy, one of his sayings is like, feeling is understanding. And I really like that, because unless you've done something, you don't know what it's like. So whether that's a cold shower, fasting, or going low carb and not feeling hungry, you don't know what that's like. And most of our population don't know what it's like. So they would never kind of get on board without getting too curious, I suppose. Or waiting for the moment where the health's
so bad.
So that kind of comes hand in hand with lower carb. So you're less hungry. That is a major feature of this way of life. And I would never have thought that, you know, 5 years ago when I was eating standard stuff in either UK or Australia.
It's so weird, isn't it? Because you're used to being raised like eating like the Western diet, which means you are hungry quite often most of the time. And to not have hunger is very odd at first. Like, you feel like, oh, okay, I probably could skip a meal quite easily without really even noticing. And then you realize you do it all the time without even thinking. You're like, I just don't want anything, thanks. I'm so full. And then you suddenly realize the next day, yeah, I could eat now. And I remember that feeling. The way I described specimen was, I feel a little bit empty inside, but I don't feel at all hungry. And there's no pang of hunger. That's quite a painful thing, hunger, isn't it? But actually just feeling a bit empty is like, well, I could eat or I couldn't eat. Either way, I don't really mind. I can handle this slightly more not full feeling, and that's absolutely fine. And I found it bizarre, like, doing the 5 days. Well, the 3 days was actually the biggest eye-opener for me last summer, because that's the first time I've done anything like that before. I've done 24 hours and had eaten carbs before and afterwards. So that's really, really difficult. Doing 3 days like a breeze. Okay, I did have a migraine, but I have more migraines than summer, to be fair, anyway. But that was like, this should be hard, surely. Like, have I cheated somehow? Have I somehow, you know, managed to find a way around making this difficult? Maybe I've not done it properly. Maybe I've been secretly eating and not realizing in the night or something. And then 5 days was the same. I was like, okay, I could do six. And that's what Maya did, who's in the Wolf Pack, in our fasting group. She did like 7 or 8 days or something. She was like, I could go another day and another day and another day. I was like, incredible what your body can do, isn't it, in those situations?
Yeah. We just don't know. If we're eating 6 times a day, which, you know, that's kind of British culture, isn't it? Meal, snack, meal, snack, meal, snack. Since I started this job, actually, I've not had breakfast Monday to Friday. That was one of my kind of challenges. And I have lunch at 1 normally and then dinner at sort of 7-ish. So, and that kind of works for me. Sometimes I have a snack sort of 5 o'clock maybe. Bizarre. Like, you know, you get by, don't you? And you don't feel hungry. And actually in the lockdown, at the weekends, I actually quite annoyed myself for not feeling hungry because I want to eat sort of more meals at the weekend and to take up some time.
Just to reward yourself for, the amount of time waiting in boredom. Yeah. Well, actually on that point though, for those people who are listening and not seen the video version of this, Ollie's a really fit guy. He is, like, you can tell he's that sort of person who has just climbed a mountain and had a nice cold bath, taught a load of kids about how to change their health, and now here he is ready to give some advice. So would you mind, apart from your fasting, would you mind sharing what it is you eat, generally throughout the week, or, you know, in a day, roughly, and also drink as well? Because I imagine that I've seen you drinking quite a bit today. I guess you're drinking a lot of water as well. So can you talk a bit about what you're doing, and, you know, and maybe describe some of the more spiritual elements? I don't know if that's the correct term. Like, do you do ice baths and stuff like that now or not? So tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, I'm big into morning routines, actually. That was kind of one of the things I was studying, picked up on a podcast in my travel year. So, yeah, I've got this like morning routine where I start with a pint of water with salt, and then I do meditation. And then followed by I do a Wim Hof breathing round for about 5 minutes, followed by meditation, because like the breathing helps you get into that zone.
Right, you got to tell us about this. How does that work? What's the breathing cycle? How does it all happen?
You basically do.
Let's do it now. Come on, teach me.
Oh my god. Okay. He's got loads of stuff online, but essentially, it's like really deep breaths from the belly, the chest, and the head.
Through the nose.
And you let. Yep. That works for me. And then you let it go. And then you start off slowly and just keep doing that. So you're kind of hyperventilating. So, and you, I do that listening to him on his, I've got his app. So I've keep doing that for about 5 minutes. And then you let all your air out. And then you can hold your breath without any air in the lungs for a weird amount of time, more than you'd think.
Oh, because I suppose you've got so much oxygen in your body from doing that breathing that you. Yeah. You sort of set yourself up to get by like a humpback whale or something. Okay.
And it kind of gives you like a natural high, and it starts the day like in a good place, like in a good headspace. And then I do a 7-minute meditation normally, like a guided one. Then I do like a 4-minute workout normally. To it's called Tabata. So you do 20 seconds on, 10 seconds off for 4 minutes. You know, people say they've not got time to exercise.
I bet that's quite high intensity, right? Is that like high intensity, or you got it?
Yes, you're going.
Which is really good for you, isn't it? They say that if you do that, that's probably better for you than going for like a 10-mile run or something. You can really intensely get your body worked out. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And then do like 2 sun salutations with yoga, so like stretching the limbs. And then I jump in a cold shower for 2 minutes. So that's my kind of morning routine before I've done anything. Then I have a coffee with cream.
Wow.
That's okay. The coffee with cream is
Let me guess. What time of day is this? Are we talking about like 3 a.m? You're doing all this stuff? Like you really austere? Or
no, I get up at, I set my alarm for 6. And the 6 to 7 is pretty much what I do kind of, like that hour for me is like my time. And then I reward myself with a coffee with double cream in it. So that's my kind of breakfast.
Nice.
And then throughout
that's
the morning.
Lovely. I think you're living the dream there.
Oh, and how you start your day can influence your day, and I picked that up on a podcast as well, and I really like that, because if you're starting off on your terms without looking at your phone, without listening to the radio, no emails, no TV, nothing, you're kind of shaping your mind and body to how you want to feel into a positive way, and that Yeah, I
really totally agree with you on that. I feel like I'm quite envious of you because, well, there's no reason for it because I could change my own life. But I feel sometimes I'm a little bit like, and this is through design and also circumstance, but I tend to be the victim of my day a little bit. I feel like I get up and I'm straight into the first thing and then I'm kind of pulled to the next thing and the next thing. And there's sometimes I suddenly think, I haven't actually had time to plan my day here. Like there's some things I really want to get done or there's something I want to do. And I kind of feel like I'm a bit like being pulled by the collar by the day. And I think when I was training to be a priest, I was in the Jesuits, which is like a missionary order, and we had much more structure and you get up really early, but you actually had time to meditate, time doing jobs and work. And by like 10 o'clock in the morning, you felt like you achieved so much already. And then you had the whole day ahead of you still. And it's incredible. Whereas I feel now I'm like, right, firefighting, what's next? What's happening? What's next? What's next? What's next? And it isn't, you don't feel like you're in control of your life at all. It's not nice.
Yeah. I mean, it's something to think about, even if it's 10 minutes, like what in the morning, what could I do to make myself feel or think positively? And yeah, it could take five minutes. It could take an hour. And, you know, choice is yours based on your lifestyle. But yeah, something to think about though. Where were we?
Great. I love that, cool. Ollie. So I was just going to ask you, just as we come to the end of our podcast today, what's your plan as an ambassador? Because maybe you don't have any other plans for what you're doing now, and what you're doing now is absolutely fantastic. But I think that as the public health collaboration grows, as it gets bigger, I think you're a big part of that. I can see how you've got a big influence to play there. And do you have any particular plans or ideas for what you want to do next as part of that, or where are you going next on your journey?
Yeah, I mean, I've been running low-carb Zoom groups for the last... I've done four cohorts within my NHS role. And yeah, I did a session today, actually. Brilliant. So I had five patients on there, all recruited sort of by me, with the aim of helping them with their reversal of diabetes or weight loss or that kind of thing. So I'd like to do more of that. We've got a good team of ambassadors in Hampshire, actually, who we've got a good support group. And there's a few other of us around Hampshire who are having really good progress with other GP practices. So I'd like to sort of build and grow that kind of side of things. And the group of surgeries next door to me in Lymington, they've just created a really good NHS sort of low carb website, and it's fantastic. And it's kind of endorsing and making all this low carb stuff really credible and reliable. And that's my favourite new resource now. So I'm trying to share that with patients and share that with staff as well.
Great,
because we're on.
And that's something that we can use for anyone. So what is the website?
newforestpcn.co.uk, and you'll find the low carb pages and weight management, but it's all around. They've got links to David Unwin and PHC and a few other people like that.
Wonderful.
So that's great. Yeah, like,
see, Lymington is a place I used to go to when I was working in that area, and I used to go and eat fish and chips at the seafront. So I'm sure it's Lymington where they've got like a lovely area where the boats come in. I'm sure it's there. It's a really pretty place, if I remember rightly.
Yeah,
I used to sit and eat fish and chips there. This is before my low carb days, by the way. So I'm glad that now they've got a local website based from the people from the area. That's lovely. I love that area. Really nice part of the world. Yeah. Okay, and then how can people connect with you, Ollie? What's the best way to connect? Is it through Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, email? What's the best way to get in touch if anyone wants to pass you a little message?
Yeah, in my health coaching days, I've still got a website that's kind of dormant, but it's still live. It's just ollielester.co.uk. Get in touch there. I'm on Excellent. Facebook and in the UK Low Carb Facebook group and Wolfpack, and we'll do the next fast whenever a time is right.
Yeah, I think I really feel like I need one soon, actually, to be honest. Like, we're recording this in February, and I think lockdown, as well as, like, you know, the cold weather we've just had recently, the dark nights, I'm feeling like I want to get myself into shape a bit more. I want to get on top of this. You actually really inspired me today, Ollie. Thank you for that. And I think a fast coming up soon would be a big part of that. So that'd be cool.
Yeah, and a cold
Thank
shower,
you today right? for coming on. Yeah, and a cold shower. Yeah, yeah. Let's do that too. That sounds really appealing. Really appealing. I'll let you know I've done it, obviously. It'd be a bit weird if I sort of took you in on Zoom to the bathroom. just believe me if I've had it. I don't mind. Okay, it's been lovely talking to you today, Ollie. It really has. I just want to say thank you for everything you're doing, because you're making a huge difference to so many people in this world.
Yeah, that's kind of like, that's my drive now, and just, you know, one person at a time. And it's just, you know, hopefully they'll tell all their mates as well. But yeah, the low carb movement is certainly growing.
That's great.
Which is great.
That's wonderful. Brilliant stuff. Cheers, Ollie. Take care of yourself. And I'll see you in the UK low carb group or the Wolfpack soon.
See you soon.
I love that. I just did a chest bump, which is not so good for a podcast, but it's very stylish. Hello, you still there? Dan here. I can see you're one of the keen ones because you're still listening. So, got a very simple request. Please go and rate and review this podcast now on Apple if you haven't done so already, and I'll read it out next week on the show. So go and do that. Hear about your review next week. Everyone's a winner. Right, I'm going to shoot off now. Take care. Have a lovely week. See you next Friday.